here. I hope I can keep this all straight and not get it all mixed up. Well, the title of the sermon is God's Purpose in Calamities. And I started a sermon the first part of the week, and I had just worked on it a day or so and had quite a ways on it. And then all of a sudden this earthquake in China hit, and I thought, my goodness, right after the cyclone that hit Burma and the tornadoes that hit on Mother's Day, I thought, I just can't speak on what I was going to speak about. The sermon was relevant to me and some of the individual trials that I had been going through, but then I thought, well, the world trials are of more importance and more center stage, so I had to change this message because I think it's undeniable that something's going on here. And so I started doing a little research since I decided to speak on a different subject, and I go online to do a lot of this stuff, and it's just marvelous the way you can go in and get information. It's so quick, it's unbelievable. So I pulled up this the Mother's Day weekend, the tornadoes that hit had killed 22 people in Missouri and Georgia and Oklahoma. And it says in over three states that we can include an Oklahoma mother who died while huddling over her child, and the child survived. She was in a bathtub and had, was huddling over the child, and the child survived and she was killed. Terrible things. And I saw this was in the off of CNN.com. It says, bloated corpses pile up. First U.S. aid flights arrive in Myanmar, but we used to call that Burma. Matter of fact, most people still do that. This is a dictatorship that took over Burma, and they did it by force, and it's a pretty sad situation there. But the UN estimates the death toll from Cyclone Nargis between 63 and 100,000, and I think they feel like that it's going to approach 100,000 deaths there from this hurricane before all is said and done. And this was a little part of what they had said here. It says the country's name was changed from Burma to Myanmar, Myanmar in 1989. But many who do not recognize the current government still use the name Burma. And it says Debbie Stoddard, head of the Southeast Asian Human Rights Group, Altsin, said her organization has received reports of aid packages being distributed with the names of military leaders on the labels. So they've held up the shipment of this food on the docks, and they've covering up where it might say U.S. or U.N. or whoever, and they're putting their names on these big bundles of rice and whatever else that's going in. Said there are people who are very concerned now that the reason the aid workers are being blocked is so that the military can deliver the aid selectively and so that they can appropriate the aid and pretend it was from them in the first place. Pretty sad, isn't it? It's pathetic, actually. Ran across this article, was in yesterday's paper. It says, tragedies fade fast from world view. And it's talking about the earthquakes in China, and I'm going to call this Burma because it's easier for me to pronounce. But they're estimating the death toll in China will be around 50,000 people. And I was going to divide this amount by the number of people that died on the Titanic, you know, because everybody remembers how what a great disaster the Titanic was. I thought, well, if I divided that and I didn't bring a calculator and I didn't do it before I spoke, maybe that would put it in some perspective, because we throw these numbers out and they just become numbers. And we can't really grasp the magnitude of what's going on here. You know, they say all tragedies are local. You know, if they don't affect you directly, then it's easy for us to get caught up in our everyday busy lives and go on with things and just block it out of our mind, because nobody wants bad news. And we as Adventists know full well what this news is talking about. It's talking about the Lord's coming again. And we as individuals, are we ready or not? Anyway, this article talks about the world forgets about these tragedies pretty quickly. Oh, they'll remember the headlines, but the individual suffering that goes on, and I won't share this whole thing with you, but the main thing it talks about is even after these tragedies, the government in Burma is not going to change. Things are going to go on, it seems, sadly to say, pretty much as they went on before, only now with more suffering and hardship, because people won't quit fighting, they won't help other people, and so consequently, things don't get done like they need to be. And this is what this article is about, that unfortunately, things pretty much go on as normal, disaster after disaster after disaster, and not much changes, and how quickly we forget about the things that happen. I had this put back, but I'll grab this out real quick. This was a headline here. This was Tuesday's, May 13th. It says, "We're afraid. About 10,000 killed, countless more missing." These are in the earthquakes in China. This was in the Indianapolis Star. But since then, since Tuesday, there's probably around 50,000 maybe died. But then right next to it says, "We've suffered enough." It has absolutely nothing to do with the earthquake whatsoever. I don't know if you saw that paper or not. But it's talking about the IU school response to NCAA's charges against an ex-coach. You know, they've suffered enough down there at IU. It's really sad that they're suffering when the headline, they ought to be embarrassed to put this together like this. We're afraid and 10,000 killed in China, but IU has suffered enough. It just seems like we're not getting the picture here. We're missing the point. So, anyway, a couple more things before I actually get to what I'm going to say. I went to a search, and I pulled up the world's deadliest disasters. Now, let me just read you just the heading of this, of what it said here. It says, "This page was assembled in reaction to the events of September 11, 2001. Now, we know what that was. That was the day the Twin Towers fell in New York. Aghast that so many people could so suddenly die, estimates originally were around 10,000, it turned out to be around 3, I wondered if there had ever been a day in history when more people had ever gone to meet their creator. As awful as the attacks were, it turns out that the day's hardly even a blip on the screen of a single day or single weekend suffering." And in general, it says this page does not include season-long or year-long disasters such as droughts or famines or wars. So I read down through here, and this is, I count them as 125 events that they listed here as the world's deadliest disasters. And what struck out to me as I went down through here was that out of 125, 107 of them has occurred from 1900 on. Now, I realize that record keeping is probably better in the 20th century than in the past. But still, if it was a big disaster, mankind noted it and recorded it. As an example, in the year 856, in Danghan, Iran, I'm probably mispronouncing that, this was on December 22nd, there was around 200,000 people killed in one of the deadliest earthquakes on record. Now, this was in 856. And then in 1556, in Shanxi province in China, had the most deadly earthquake in history. They believed that it was around 830,000 people died. And that was in 1556. But what I want you to come away with out of this is out of the 125 events he recorded, 107 of them occurred from 1900 till now. That is pretty amazing statistic to me. I mean, we're not talking more than half. We're talking probably 90% of them. That should tell us something. That doesn't count, and this only went to September 2001. That doesn't count from 2001 to now, which in 2005, there were over 80,000 people killed in Pakistan in an earthquake. And in 2006, there was 5,749 in Indonesia in Java. In 2007, 500 lost their lives in central Peru. And then the earthquake this past week in China. So those weren't even listed. Then the one that occurred in 2004 in the Indian Ocean was a magnitude 9.1 to 9.3, and that was around 200 and around 230,000 people lost their lives with this tsunami and earthquake that hit in Indonesia, and that was December 26, 2004. Now, I know this all sounds kind of grim, and I also know that it's hard to get your mind around this. I can't grasp how many people that is dead, but that's a lot of fatalities. So we know this is going on, and when we look at the statistics, we know that it's happening more frequently and more severity, and more people are dying. We have to ask ourselves, where does God fit in all this? And I think that we as Adventists have a real good idea. And there's a lot I'm going to say today here that you're already aware of as Adventists and are know full well. But the world doesn't know. And for some reason, the world's not getting the picture. So let me begin here with what I wanted to say. And I'm going to quote a lot today from the Spirit of Prophecy, and I know that most of you are familiar with what I'm going to say, and you've read it probably several times before, but it doesn't hurt to go over it again. But I want to start with this story. It's a legend that concerned an old violin maker who was envied by his fellow artisans because of the superior quality of his product. And finally, one day, he disclosed the secret of his success. While the others went into the protected valleys to cut the wood and to make their violins, he climbed the rugged crags of a nearby mountain to secure the trees, which had become severely twisted and gnarled by storms. From these weather-beaten monarchs of the forest, then he fabricated his violins, famous for their tone and their beauty. He knew that the fierce trial of the mountain gales caused such trees to strengthen and the fibers to toughen. And this, their storm-tortured heart and grain, was used to produce the deep and colorful tones when the instrument was played. So out of adversity can come something good. And that's what we want to get from this message today, and it's what we want to get from what God's trying to tell us. So let me start sharing with you some of the words from the Spirit of Prophecy. It says, in the prophecies of the future, it is opened before us as plainly as it was opened to the disciples by the word of Christ. But multitudes have no more understood the important truths than if they had never been revealed. So God has spoken to us, but yet, it's just like it never said a word. I mean, nobody gets it. Nobody cares. Everybody's too busy doing whatever they want to do. It says here, this is from... That was from The Great Controversy. This is from Fundamentals of Christian Education, 1885. There is a day that God had appointed for the close of the world's history. This gospel and the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. And then shall the end come. Prophecy is fast fulfilling. Much, much more should be said about these tremendously important subjects. The day is at hand when the destiny of all souls shall be fixed forever. Great pains should be taken to keep this subject matter before the people. This solemn fact is to be kept not only before the people of the world, but before our own churches. Also, that day of the Lord will come suddenly and unexpectedly. The fearful warning of prophecy is addressed to every soul. Let no one feel that he is secure from the danger of being surprised. This is for everybody. It's not just for the church. Sometimes we feel like we're ready, and we may think we're ready, but you don't want to be so sure. And I think that's why God allows us to have trials, to really, not that He needs to know, but so that we know. We might need a wake up. You know, so you think you're ready to go through the time of trouble, huh? Well, don't be so fast in thinking that. This is from Selected Messages. We're now able to describe with accuracy the scenes to be enacted with. We are not now able to describe with accuracy the scenes to be enacted in our world in the future. But this we do know, that this is a time when we must watch unto prayer, for the great day of the Lord is at hand. Perplexities that are scarcely dreamed of are before us. Volume 9 of the Testimonies. We're standing on a threshold of crisis of the ages. In quick succession, the judgments of God will follow one another. Fire, flood, earthquake, with war and bloodshed. The time of trouble, trouble such as not was since there was a nation, is right upon us, and we are like the sleeping virgins. You remember the story. We don't have our lamps trimmed. This is a section on deeds of violence here. No scientific theory can explain the steady march of evil workers under the generalship of Satan. In every mob, wicked angels are at work, rousing men to commit deeds of violence. Did you see that one on TV the other day where this guy hopped on the bus and starts beating a bus driver in the face? The bus is going down the road. This is a city bus. He hops on and says, "Remember me," he's got a mask on, and just starts wailing away on the bus driver. And the bus driver's trying to get the bus stopped. The perversity and cruelty of men will reach such a height that God will reveal himself in his majesty. Very soon, the wickedness of the world will have reached its limit, and as in the days of Noah, God will pour out his judgments. That's from Upward Look. Terrible reports we hear of murders, robberies, railway accidents, and deeds of violence tell us a story that the end of all things is at hand. Now, I know that this message is not one of joy and uplifting. I realize that. And it's been a pretty sad week with all these deaths. But we don't want to get discouraged. We need to realize that God's in control of things. And I've got this little story here on discouragement I want to share with you right now. It says, there's a legend that Satan decided to get rid of a number of his tools. So he arranged an auction. And there were envy, deceit, malice, sensuality, enmity, thoughtlessness, and many other tools which Satan had used successfully, priced very low. One piece marked very high and was labeled discouragement. "Why do you want so much for this tool?" asked one bidder. "This tool," replied the old tempter, "has always been my most successful one. You can see it has more wear and tear than the rest. It is used as a wedge to get into a man's mind when all others fail. Practically every human being has had this tool used on him, although very few know that I am the one wielding it." And as it worked out, none could afford the price Satan demanded for discouragement, so he is still using it today. So we don't want to get discouraged. We fall right into Satan's hand when that happens. This is from Sermons and Talks. "The Spirit of God is being withdrawn from the earth. God has withdrawn his hand. We have only to look at Johnstown, Pennsylvania. He did not prevent the devil from wiping that whole city out of existence. And these very things will increase until the close of Earth's history." Now, she said this. This was in 1889, on May 31st. And No, she didn't say it on May 31st. On May 31st in 1889 is when the Great Johnstown flood happened. Do you remember that story? Of course, I know that was been a while back, but the Great Conemaugh River or something, I believe, broke loose from a dam that had been built upstream by the ta from the town, about maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles upstream. This dam is blocking a lake up there where rich people out of Pittsburgh, this is where the wealth of the country was, they would go up into this area in the summertime because it was cooler. This was the days before they had air conditioning, and they called these places cottages, but they were mansions. And they would go up there and play on the lake and whatnot in the summertime, the rich iron workers and the tycoons of their day. Well, during a series of heavy rains, the levee was soaked with water and it broke and came down the valley into Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and just devastated the town. I mean, it came through with tremendous force. You see, ever see pictures of, you see locomotives all stacked up and buildings twisted around. It was a terrible situation. So she says that even God's spirit is withdrawing, and he didn't prevent Satan from doing this. It says here in Testimonies to Ministries, the time has now come when one moment we may be on solid earth, the next the earth may be heaving beneath our feet. Earthquakes will take place when least expected. Now, our scripture reading today was from Luke 19, 37 through 40. And just think for a minute, just draw a little bit of a parallel there. And I didn't check what Mrs. White said about that. I didn't check the spirit of prophecy, but think about it. Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. And during his triumphant entry, there were people there who greeted him, who loved him and was thrilled to see him. And that will be the same as the end time. There'll be people that will be thrilled to see the Lord. And then there'll be others that won't be. And then what I wanted to say is, and Jesus said, even the stones would cry out. Do you think it's possible now, as Jesus is on his return to earth, that the stones are beginning to cry out? You know, think about God's word has really been stifled in China and in Indonesia and a lot of these Islamic countries. Do you see how maybe that God's calling people? The stones are crying out. This is something to think about. Maybe God's missionaries can't get in there, but they can't keep the stones from crying out. Okay, this is from Testimonies, Volume 8. It says, oh, that God's people had a sense of the impending destruction of thousands of cities now almost given to idolatry. Transgression has almost reached its limit. Confusion fills the world, and a great terror is soon to come upon human beings. The end is very near. We need to know the truth about these things. We should be preparing for what is soon to break upon the world as an overwhelming surprise. The world would be overwhelmed and surprised. Oh, that the people might know the time of their visitation, the time of God's destructive judgments, and get this, is a time of mercy. That seems a little strange, doesn't it? For those who have had no opportunity to learn what truth is, tenderly will the Lord look upon them. His heart of mercy is touched, and his hand is still stretched out to save. This is a time when God is calling us to him. This is a time of mercy. It seems a little strange, but it really is. It's a time of mercy. This is a time before probation closes. And I don't know that much of the Christian world is getting the big picture. So much of the Christian world believes they're going to be raptured out. They talk about peace and safety. There's no need for alarm. These unfortunate events happen. But remember, just hang in there. Everything, we're going to be taken out. God's church will be taken off the earth, and everything's going to be fine. So people aren't preparing. And I ran across this. This came in the mail to me. It's from the Berean Christian Store bookstore. And here's a couple of books that I wanted to bring out to your attention. And one of them is entitled "Before the Thunder Rolls." and it shows a whole bunch of NASCARs here lined up. See it? Devotion for NASCAR fans. Former race chaplain Dale Beaver offers, and I'm sorry, you know, NASCAR is home in North Carolina. And I'm a big racing fan because I'll probably go to the 500. Maybe I shouldn't, but I mean, I like racing, but it's got its place. Former race chaplain Dale Beaver offers inspirational insights and antecedents from his years with the NASCAR Cup Series. Story makes connection between stock car racing and the Christian life. Seems a little bit trivial compared to what's going on in the world to me. Rather than a warning about what's to take place, we're talking about stock car racing. Here's another one. How to hit a curveball, grill the perfect steak, and become a real man with a baseball under it. Finally, an instruction manual. I thought that's what the Bible was. Gee, finally, an instruction manual. Take it from us. It ain't easy being a man, so we wrote a book on it. So you see what my point is, I'm trying to make, is that the world's not connecting. There's a disconnect between these events that's happening in the world and what we should be saying up here from the pulpit, what churches should be doing. Okay. This is from Testimonies, Volume 5, page 233. Escape for their life is the warning from the angels of God. Other voices, this is Satan's workers, are saying, do not become excited. There is no cause for special alarm. Those who are at ease in Zion cry, peace and safety, while heaven declares that swift destruction is about to come upon the transgressor. The young, the frivolous, the pleasure-loving, consider these warnings as idle tales and turn from them with jest. I think we're seeing that today. It's like that newspaper article where IU had suffered enough. Just a few more. Dangers are all around us from the powers without and satanic workings within. But the restraining power of God is now being exercised. God is still holding back the winds of strife. They're slowly being released. I have been shown that the Spirit of the Lord is being withdrawn from the earth. God's keeping power will soon be refused to all who continue to disregard His commandments. Iniquity is becoming so common a thing that it no longer shocks the senses as it once did. That was from Letters, page 258. Being in a position that we need to be wide awake, wholly devoted, wholly converted, wholly concentrated to God, but we seem to sit as though we're paralyzed. And she says, God of heaven, wake us up. That's from Selected Messages. I think God is trying to wake the world up. You know, in that tsunami that hit in 2004, I forgot to tell you, I read that they said the entire world convulsed when those tectonic plates slipped. Seismographs all around the world recorded it, but they record very minute variations. But they said the world actually convulsed all the way around. Even now, I know a half inch isn't much with the size of the world, but clear around on the other side of the world, the earth had convulsed a half an inch. Now, I assume that's just a slight up and down. You didn't feel it, but it did. That's what they said. Nothing seems to jar the senses anymore. Natural disasters have become commonplace. Another earthquake, another tornado, another war, life goes on. How frequent we hear of earthquakes and tornadoes, destruction by fire and flood with great loss of life and property. It seems that these calamities are capricious outbreaks of disorganized, unregulated forces of nature, wholly beyond the control of man, and in them, though God's purposes may be read. All we have to do is see it. They are among the agencies by which he seeks to arouse men and women to their sense of danger. That's from Prophets and Kings. Manuscripts releases, Volume 3. The plagues of God are already falling upon the earth. Will not these judgments bring professing Christians to their senses? God permits them to come to the world that they may take heed, that sinners they may be afraid and tremble before him. He's trying to wake us up. Now, this is not too long, and I'm almost done here. I don't want to make you too down here. But this is taken from Matthew 13, and it's about the tares and the wheat. This is what this is in regards to, you know, where they went out and sowed the wheat in the day, and then at night somebody came in and polluted the field with the tares. You remember that story? It says, Satan delights in war, for it excites the worst passions of the soul, and then sweeps into eternity its victim, steeped in vice and blood. It is his object to incite the nations to war against one another, for he can thus divert the minds of the people and the work of preparation to stand in the day of God. Now, think about this just a minute. His purpose is to divert the minds of the people from what? From the work of preparation. That's what we all need to be doing, getting ourselves ready. But when he has young men thinking about battle or army or whatever, it becomes attractive, and then they go over there, they get killed. If they're not right with the Lord, then Satan has swept them away for eternity. Think about this. You know, we have a presidential election coming up, and it seems like all you turn is turn on the TV, and they're always talking about Obama and Hillary and John McCain and this faction and this faction, who said this, who said that, all fighting back. It's verbal war. And all the while that's going on, if we get sucked into that, then we are forgetting what we need to be doing. You know, it's kind of like a mini war in a way. You know, you think about it. Sports can be that way too. You know, you get one city in a Super Bowl against another city in a Super Bowl, and all this is sideshow stuff. It detracts us from what we need to be doing. It goes on to say here, Satan works through the elements to garner his harvest of unprepared souls. He has studied the secrets of the laboratories of nature, and he uses all his power to control the elements as far as God allows. When he was suffered to afflict Job, how quickly the flocks, herds, servants, houses, children were swept away. One trouble succeeding another in a moment's notice. It is God that shields his creature and hedges them in from the power of the destroyer. But the Christian world would have shown contempt for the law of Jehovah, and the Lord will do just what he has declared he would do. He will withdraw his blessings from the earth, remove his protecting care from those who are rebelling against his law and his teaching, and forcing others to do the same. You know, this kind of goes along with our Sabbath program this morning, where he was talking about the Sunday law. You know, boy, look out when that thing passes. You think things in nature are bad now. If God is withdrawing his protection, Satan has control of all whom God does not especially guard. Satan will favor and prosper some in order to further his own designs. He will bring trouble upon others and lead men to believe that it is God who is afflicting them. So Satan can pour out blessings and he can pour out hardships. And he does this all to manipulate things, to make God look bad and him look good, and blame God. Well, I'm going to skip some of this, but let me say this part down here. These visitations are to become more and more frequent and disastrous. This is, by the way, is all from the Great Controversy I'm reading. Page 589. These visitations are to become more and more frequent and disastrous. Destruction will be upon both man and beast. The earth mourneth, and this is from Isaiah 24, 4 and 5. The earth mourneth and fadeth away. The haughty people do languish. The earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof, because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, and broken the everlasting covenant. That is from Isaiah 24, 4 and 5. God has a purpose in permitting these calamities to occur. They are one of his means of calling men and women to their senses. By unusual working through nature, God will express to doubting human agencies that which he clearly reveals in his word. If they won't read the Bible and understand, then nature will call into play God. The dawn of the last day events are breaking upon this world. We can see that. The wake-up alarm is now sounding. The question is, what will we do about it? Shall we just roll over and hit the snooze button, sleep a little bit longer? Like I said, you know, when these tragedies, they fade fast. Put them out of our mind. I don't want to think about it. Let's go on. It's just an isolated event. And all the while we sleep a little longer, the trap gets tighter around us. In the great closing work, we shall meet with perplexities that we know not how to deal with. But let us not forget that there are three great powers of heaven are working, that a divine hand is on the wheel, and that God will bring his purposes to pass. I'll close with this short story. This is about the unsinkable ship. At the time of the sinking of the Titanic, one of our great American preachers was in Belfast, Ireland. The Titanic had been built in Belfast, and there was a great local pride over the mighty ship. She had been heralded far and wide as the unsinkable ship. 16 members of the church in Belfast, all skilled mechanics, went down with her. The mayor said that Belfast had never seen such grief as that which came over this terrible tragedy. When the news finally was verified that the gallant ship was certainly lost, so deep was the grief that it was said that strong men met upon the streets, grasped each other's hands, burst into tears, and parted without a word. The visiting American preacher preached the Sunday after the tragedy in the church to which 16 members had been lost. They were members of this church. Not only was the building packed with people, but on the platform were lords, bishops, and ministers of all denominations. In the audience, many newly made widows were sitting and with their orphans, and they were sobbing on every side. The great preacher took as his subject the unsinkable ship. And he spoke of the frail boat on the Sea of Galilee, unsinkable because of the master was on board. In the after part of the vessel, thank God he is still alive and still in charge today. And when the children of men take their only true pilot back on board, we will ride out the present storm and we will bring the vessel through to the fair harbor of our hopes. Thank you.